Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. I am your host, Emily Rowell with Peachtree Offices, and we have a great lineup this morning. I've got Richard Casanova here with Buckhead Business Radio X. How are you today?
Richard. I go by Rich, but Richard, I feel like that's my mom used when I was in trouble. Richard, get in here. Yeah. You got a full house here this morning. Yeah,
I do.
And our producer engineer, Ryan's going to be chiming in with some bios this morning.
Yes, absolutely. And so we want to welcome everybody this morning. I've got Robin Fraser Clark here. Good morning. Messed up. I need a little more coffee. Yeah.
So, how long here in Atlanta?
I've been in Atlanta since 1988. I went to Emory Law School and graduated from there and stayed here. All
right. And you're going to talk a little bit about
plaintiff's personal injury. I'm a trial lawyer. I only represent individuals, plaintiffs, who have been injured through negligence of someone else or some corporation. And I represent plaintiffs exclusively.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. And she is a top 100 trial lawyer, too. So
wow.
Y'all get ready.
I want to be that one day when I grow up. Yeah, I don't know how I can make that happen. That's not as easy as it sounds. Yeah.
And I also have J.P. Gingras with the Gingras firm this morning. Hello, how are you?
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Yes, great to have you. He is a forensic accountant and economic damage expert.
That is correct.
I'm the owner and president of the Gingras firm LLC here in Atlanta.
And how long have you been in Atlanta?
I came here in 1998 after being in school in upstate New York.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And I'm originally from Montreal, Canada.
Oh,
wow. Okay. Welcome, eh?
Sorry. That's right.
And this morning, we also have Sandy Wallach with Wallach Law. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good. Thanks. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And he is a criminal defense attorney for 20 years.
Yes, I am.
Yes, and you're going to talk a little bit about that today, and then also possibly the Atlanta Public School trial that went on and on forever.
Yes.
We'd love to hear that. So thanks again for being here, and thanks everybody for listening. I just want to make sure you know that this show has been brought to you in part by Peachtree Offices, where you can work virtually anywhere, and by 3A Law Practice Management. They help lawyers start and grow their practice, and by Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School. You can find their logo and links to their websites on AtlantaLegalExperts.com. I also would like to welcome Ronnie Watterson with the Watterson Firm. He is a top 100 trial lawyer, and he's also going to be talking a little bit about funeral home negligence today. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
So let's get started.
All right. It's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Ronnie Watterson. He is an accomplished and dedicated trial attorney, recently named to top 100 trial lawyer in the United States. His passion for justice is unmatched. After years in corporate America, Mr. Watterson became an attorney, training with the nation's top litigators, including the legendary trial lawyer Willie Gary. Mr. Watterson has successfully brought cases against some of the top corporations in the United States in the areas of personal injury, commercial law, and premises liability. His firm also ranks number one in the state of Georgia in the area of funeral home negligence. Mr. Watterson has tremendous knowledge and expertise from his experiences in business and law. Most recently, was nominated to the top 40 under 40 lawyers in the United States, and he is also the winner of the Esquire Award presented by the National Bar Association. Last month, April 2015, his firm was named the Law Firm of the Month by Attorney at Law magazine. Welcome, Mr. Watterson.
Thank you.
Wow, that was good. I like that. Thank you for being here. We've got a lot of good attorneys here and also non-attorneys.
Thank you.
Definitely experts and fit for the show. So tell us, Ronnie, a little bit about your background and why you became a lawyer.
Well, I started interning with one of my older cousins. He's been practicing for about 25 years in New York. And I got into law that way. My uncle was a senator. I'm from Liberia, so he's the president of the Senate back there. So he, you know, got us involved pretty early on growing up. I have cousins that are attorneys as well here in New Jersey, D.C. So it's kind of like a family type of thing. Personal injury law, I got involved in it when I was practicing with Willie Gary. So that kind of just moved me in that direction. I've been doing that ever since.
So tell me a little bit about your firm.
We're at the 1100 Peachtree Street. It's in Midtown Atlanta. We were downtown. We just moved to 1100 last year. We practice purely in personal injury. We do commercial litigation, so we do a lot of car accidents, wrongful death, negligence cases. We've sued corporations, and that's pretty much all we do. We do funeral home negligence, like was just mentioned. I think that's a very underrated area. A lot of attorneys, they have connections with the funeral homes, so they don't like to sue them. We sue them because it's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors that families should be protected when they're dealing with funeral home directors. So we bring cases against them quite often.
And your firm was ranked number one in Georgia in funeral home negligence.
Correct.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, like I said, a lot of firms in Georgia, they tend not to want to sue the funeral home directors because they have relationships with them. For example, they want to go after the wrongful death claims, the claims that brought the deceased to the funeral homes. And they don't focus on what the funeral home do when they are entrusted with the bodies of people who have passed away. You're dealing with families at their most emotional time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of funeral home directors take quite a bit of advantage of that.
So describe a negligence, and I don't want to get too graphic for our listeners or anything, but I'm just trying to understand what would a negligent funeral home
well,
be?
For example, we recently had a case in the last couple of weeks where the deceased was taken to a funeral home and they left his body out. They didn't freeze it. When she came to view it, it was completely decomposed, and it was pretty dramatic. I mean, when you're dealing with stuff like that, you're already at your most emotional
sure.
time. And when the funeral home directors don't respect the deceased, it really you can't get closure. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of times when lawsuits are filed as a result of these actions, people who have lost someone, they don't really get closure until maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line when the lawsuit has finalized.
Sure.
So it's a very important area.
Wow, that does sound like, and that's like a niche that you guys
correct.
Found.
We do it funeral home negligence and, of course, crematorium as well, because a lot of times crematoriums, they feel like they're dealing with ashes, and because you can't get DNA from ashes, they just essentially do whatever they want behind closed doors. We found a lot of cases where people are not getting the correct ashes. So essentially, you get your loved one back, and it's not your loved one.
I would never even think of that.
You wouldn't, yeah.
That is
people
unbelievable.
Usually you're trusting your funeral home director, you're trusting
sure.
your crematorium folks to do the right thing. A lot of times we had a case last year actually that kind of brought light to a lot of the behind closed doors type of things. People were funeral home directors were fraudulently presenting cremation certificates, fraudulently notarizing cremation certificates, saying that the bodies were notarized when they really weren't notarized in front of them. You know, the whole point of a notary is to, you know, witness a signature.
Sure.
You know, I've cremated this thing. I've seen you. Mm-hmm. I go ahead and acknowledge that. They were just getting stacks of cremation certificates and just stamping them and just handing them over. And so essentially, you don't know what cremation certificate went with what body. So it's pretty disgusting, in my opinion, because
right.
when you're dealing with those types of situations, people trust you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's your job as a funeral home director to make that time a little easier for them and not complicated.
Absolutely. Now, how do you make other people aware of this situation and advise them on how to pick the correct, you know, pick a good funeral home?
Well, a lot of people go with recommendations when it comes to laying down their loved ones. You know, I would go with that, you know, just whoever your loved one or friends have used and mm-hmm. trust, you know,
mm-hmm.
I would go with that. A lot of times people, if you haven't gotten in that situation before, you wouldn't know where to go.
Right.
And you would just pretty much pick maybe the one that's closer to you or the one that has the best price. A lot of times people pick funeral homes because pricing, mm-hmm. you know, and they do take advantage of
you always
people.
Get what you pay for.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Let me ask you this, tell us about some of your most rewarding cases.
Well, I have, you know, my practice is pretty much all referral based. We haven't done any advertising. We've been, you know, doing it
except
for about
now.
9 years. Well, except for now. So any case that we receive, we really appreciate people trusting us with their cases. When I first started practicing, one that comes to mind was older lady. She was about 80 years old, and she had recently purchased a home in a subdivision, a recently built subdivision. She was just going against a corporation that built a subdivision and put her home on the end of it, where all the water from the subdivision just landed in her backyard. So it completely flooded it.
And oh, my goodness.
And it was so atrocious looking. She tried to get them to fix it. They wouldn't budge. It was going to cost them too much money.
Right.
She wrote letters. They ignored her, et cetera, et cetera. And she was such a fiery older lady. I mean, she was like 80-something years old. She would not let it go. So she came over to us, and we talked about it. We said, listen, you know, going against a corporation can be, you know, quite expensive, quite costly. And, it's, you know, a lot of times they have these big lawyers that are going to stand in your way. And she was not impressed. She was, you know, I'm going after them. I'm going to sue them. Because she spent her life savings trying to get that backyard back together. I mean, it looks so horrible. Wow. When I looked at the pictures, I was like, oh, no, they can't get away with this. This is awful.
Yeah.
So we sued them, and we won. And we also got punitive damages because they agreed that their conduct was that atrocious. You know?
Right.
But that's just one of those cases where, you know, she probably wouldn't have gotten the justice that she deserved, because a lot of people will look at those cases like, oh, you know, just a backyard. What are the damages? There's no injury. You know, mm-hmm. it's just property. You know, mm-hmm. go ahead and fix the backyard. You know, don't worry about it. It's not a big money case, but it ended up being a big money case because we made it into their conduct. It was so bad, and, you know, if you don't shine light on it, they will keep doing it. And that's what corporations do. It's all about bottom line. So you have to make sure that they take responsibility. That's the only way they're going to reform. That's the only way. That's right. The only thing to think about.
Right, right. Well, that sounds awesome. And that you really did bring justice for her. And that's, and now she's happy?
She told me a few things. You know, don't give up. It doesn't matter what, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong. You know,
right.
Go after them.
Right. Couldn't live like that either. Now, your slogan is "Your voice in the pursuit of justice." What does that mean to you? And that kind of sums it up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We bring cases against, you know, the largest corporations or the smallest person, and we are going to fight for you, regardless of the outcome. So, what we're promising you is we're going to fight for you, and mm-hmm. we're going to do everything we can to get you justice. Doesn't mean you're going to get it, but we're going to speak for you. We're going to be your voice. The corporations have 4, 5, 6 law firms. We're going to speak, and we're going to be heard. And we're going to be your voice in that pursuit, because that's what you're looking for. Because justice is not guaranteed, but it's all about fairness. And we're just going to make sure that you get that fair treatment. Somebody's going to listen to you. Somebody's going to answer to you. A CEO from a corporation is going to come down. They're going to sit and look at you and explain why something happened. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be your voice in that pursuit.
I like that. That's great. So if you could...
I do have a quick question, Rich Kasten over here. Your slogan, it sounds like a superhero kind of thing, right? Do you have no cape included? Yeah.
No.
No, a serious question. How do we rank in terms of regulation for the funeral industry as opposed to other states?
Well, Georgia is...
not really very, ranking, but I guess...
They're a very big funeral... Most of the places in the South, actually. They're huge on funeral homes. Those companies make a lot of money.
But do you mean they're heavily regulated as opposed to other
states
are more loosely?
They're not heavily regulated. They have, they do have laws that govern their conduct,
right.
But they're mostly civil.
Okay.
There's no criminal, you know, penalties really right. for violations.
Okay.
But they're pretty fair.
And you may or may not be familiar with the other states, but like, you know, New York or California, I mean, are they, you're probably just mostly familiar with the South and Georgia here, right?
Correct. I am.
I was just kind of curious if other states are... more strict in terms of enforcement and issues like that. But I kind of had another question, but I think you already answered it as well. But as far as folks looking for a funeral home, so there's no really like, Better Business Bureau kind of rate rankings or for funeral homes or?
No, what I would usually recommend with someone looking for a funeral home is to trust a loved
sure.
one.
Sure, okay.
You know, someone who a funeral home has done right by.
Okay.
Because you never know what you're going to get.
Right.
I wonder if it's really how long they've been in, you know, business as well.
A lot of funeral homes have a real good presence in a certain community. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in that community trust them.
Right.
So they're part of the community. And
right.
they're supposed to be trusted. But they take advantage of that trust very often.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today. And if you can let our listeners know how they can reach you.
Thank you. The Waterson firm is 1100 Peachtree Street. It's in Midtown Atlanta. Waterson is spelled with two O's, so I'll tell you the easiest way to contact us is lawfirmofatl.com. You can just go to lawfirmofatl.com, and all our information is on there. That's our website.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, helping attorneys get the word out about their cause. And on to you, Ryan.
All right. Thank you, Emily. I'd like to please welcome Mrs. Robin Fraser-Clark. She is a trial lawyer who represents people who have been injured in civil lawsuits. Robin has practiced law in Atlanta for 27 years. She is a past president of the State Bar of Georgia, the Mandatory Bar Association comprised of 44,000 Georgia lawyers. She is also a past president of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, a professional association of plaintiffs' personal injury lawyers. Robin is currently the president of the Lawyers Club of Atlanta. Robin has been elected to the membership in the American Board of Trial Advocates and the International Society of Barristers. Robin has been named as one of the top 50 women lawyers in Georgia. She and her husband, Bill Clark, who is Director of Political Affairs of Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, have been married for 23 years and have two children, Chaz, age 20, a senior at Georgia College State University, and Alex, age 18, who will be entering University of Georgia this fall. Welcome, Robin Fraser-Clark.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
Thanks so much for being here. Tell me about trying cases in court. And do you do that? Obviously.
I do. I'm a trial lawyer, and I handle only personal injury plaintiffs' cases. I represent individuals who have been injured. And when I take a case, I have to sum it up and evaluate it because I always assume it won't settle, that we're going to go to trial. So when I take in a case and decide I'm going to represent somebody, it's with the mindset that we're going to ultimately try that case. Now, a lot of cases settle on the way to trial, but I am a real trial lawyer who goes and strikes the jury and tries the case and wins the case for the client.
Wonderful. So you kind of start with the end in mind.
I believe that's important.
So tell me about your fees. What is a contingency fee?
Contingency fee is a fee that is contingent upon recovery for the client. I don't get paid unless I recover something for the client. Unless we win, I don't get paid a fee. So it it's a great mechanism to allow someone who has no means to be able to hire a great trial lawyer and get her case heard. It's really a wonderful way to level the playing field with the defense attorneys who bill corporations by the hour. So I don't bill by the hour. I only get a fee if we're successful.
And you represent the plaintiff.
I always represent the plaintiff.
And so if you lose, what happens? Do you still get a fee?
No, I don't. I don't get a fee. We're in it together. That's the one of the great things I think about representing plaintiffs and contingency fees is that I'm in the boat with the client. We've got to win this together.
Right. Right. And what kind of cases you take personal injury cases. So what have been your favorite cases that you've taken?
I take a wide variety. In the realm of plaintiff's personal injury cases, I do just about everything. Car wreck cases, bicyclists, if you've been injured riding a bike, if you've been run over by a car as a pedestrian. And let me just point out, a lot of people don't realize they may have a case if they're run over by a car that's even a hit and run. And that's a certain situation called where you would have an uninsured motorist case.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't recognize that or even realize that. But I represent pedestrians, bicyclists, people who are injured in car wrecks. I handle slip and falls. Those are called premises liability cases. Mm-hmm. I handle products liability cases where someone's been injured by a product that is defective. And that's a wide range, any kind of product. Medical malpractice, sexual harassment. I do anything where any individual has been injured or damaged by someone else or some other company or product.
So if somebody has been to a business several times and then they get injured in that business, is there a case there? Like a Kroger?
Yes. Let's take that situation, a Kroger or a Publix or a grocery store where they frequent. That would be a premises liability case. And if they fall or trip over something that shouldn't be there in the way, there are certain standards that every business has to uphold, one of which that we're talking about, such as in a Walmart or a Publix or a Kroger or any place like that, they have a duty to patrol the aisles every 15 minutes and make sure there's nothing that could hurt one of their business customers.
Right.
And so you can get proof of that. A lot of times there are cameras mm-hmm. taking video, which we always get that inside of a lawsuit. We obtain that, and we can prove that they didn't follow the rules, and then there is a case for injuries.
So I bet you have a lot of like private investigators that help you.
I do.
Who else? What other types of businesses that help you?
Private investigators. Often in my car wreck cases, I have an accident reconstructionist.
Sure.
For example, in car wreck cases now, almost every car has a black box that tells you how fast the car was going at the time of impact and even 5-10 seconds
really?
Before impact.
I didn't know that.
Whether the seat belts were on, whether they deployed. For example, I'll hire an expert who has expertise in downloading that computer information from the black box of the car. And then that expert can tell me, for example, I've got a case right now where I have an expert who's downloaded the information from the defendant's vehicle. The defendant has said under oath that he stopped at a stop sign. Terrible crash with my client's, a T-bone. And my client says, no, he ran the stop sign. Well, mm-hmm. we can prove with this black box that, in fact, he ran the stop sign because 1 second before the collision, he was going 25 miles per hour, according to the black box. So when you get that kind of information, yeah. it's case over.
Right.
So that sort of expert, accident reconstructionist, I know J.P. Gingras is here. He's an economist. I often use an economist to help me tell the story of damages of my client. And so an economist.
Help them get a good settlement.
Or at trial. J.P.'s testified for me at trial. So we put that kind of evidence on at trial to show the jury damages, future lost wages as a result of this injury.
Wow, that's amazing. This is exciting. Now I know why you do what you do.
It's interesting. It's interesting work. I really love it and have a passion for it.
Yeah, and helping people, you know, get what
they deserve.
I love it,
yes.
So tell me, do you think trial lawyers have a bad name in the public?
I think generally they might, because I think there's been a campaign against trial lawyers as if we're... I don't know.
Always suing or...
Well,
I don't
that's right. You know what? They say always suing. I say holding irresponsible people accountable.
Right.
And without the civil justice system, let me tell you, a lot of people would not be held accountable. Mm-hmm. There would be no justice for a lot of people but for the civil justice system.
Right.
We can't always rely on government to bring negligent actors to justice. It's got to be the civil justice system. So I think people have wrongly given trial lawyers a bad name. Through my work with the state bar and Georgia trial lawyers, I hope I am trying to make a difference to change that, to say, no, we're the good guys. We're the ones that get justice for people. We're in this fight with you, and we protect the civil justice system.
I've got a quick question, Rich Kasten over here. How much has the civilian media helped your cause and case in recent years? And is all that admissible? Or, I mean, how do you, you know, beyond the standard security cameras?
You're talking about, like, if there's a news story?
No, I mean if somebody with their smartphone's taking video of the incident, right?
Oh, definitely. We would try to find out if there is any video taken by a phone,
right.
Or anyone there. I mean, we talk to every eyewitness involved in a wreck, who sees a wreck. We would get that, and it's admissible.
Okay.
All he has, for a video to be admissible, it's very easy. It's just, is it a fair and accurate representation of what you saw?
Okay.
Boom, it's in, and we put that into evidence.
Okay.
So back to the hit and run, that reminds me. So how would you get a case for that person?
Well, a lot of people don't know this, and I have a blog, and I've blogged about this, and it's interesting because I want people to know. If you own a car, and you've bought a particular type of insurance called uninsured motorist coverage, that covers you even as a pedestrian. But I'm going to challenge you to go look at your policy. The word pedestrian's never used in it, or on foot, or anything like that. It is designed not to say that, designed not to tell you that you have coverage, but you do. And in fact, this one case I had where a young man was struck right over here in Buckhead by the Tongue and Groove on Piedmont Road, struck by a hit-and-run car. There's no question we could prove that. We had many witnesses. He was in the crosswalk, hit-and-run. We brought an uninsured motorist claim against his carrier, State Farm, fought for years and years and years. You're talking about obtaining justice. We fought for years, had to take it to the Georgia Court of Appeals. So there's now a case, Eels versus State Farm, that says exactly what I'm saying. The Court of Appeals of Georgia had to rule, yes, he's entitled to that uninsured motorist coverage.
Wow.
Well,
so it's not like you have to go find the driver.
No, it's a case. It's a case against John Doe. So it's the client versus John Doe.
Right.
And John Doe is going to be represented by your own insurance carrier.
Gotcha.
Wow. Quick question too. How many issues become insurance fraud when people approach you and they claim this happened, and can you kind of sniff through that and figure out?
You know, I would hope so after 27 years of practicing law in Georgia. I'll tell you what, though, when people come to me, Rich, it's a pretty big step to go see a lawyer and say, I want to bring a lawsuit. It's a pretty big moment. I've never had the situation you're describing where someone comes and contacts me and is bringing some sort of fraudulent deal. I've never encountered that in 27 years.
Wow.
Yeah, imagine you'd have to be a pretty good actor in a pretty
to disguise that.
All right.
So if something happened, could I sue the state of Georgia for an injury?
Yes, you can. Although typically states have what's called sovereign immunity, protecting the king. The king has done no wrong. You can't sue the state. We have an exception to that called the Georgia Tort Claims Act. It allows us to sue the state. There are many, many rules to follow that you have to meet to be able to do that. But it's a waiver of their sovereign immunity up to $1 million per claim. Most states have some sort of waiver, but then they cap damages. So ours has a waiver, but we've capped damages for each claim at $1 million. If you follow the steps, and it's intricate, under the Georgia Tort Claims Act, you're allowed to sue the state, and only the state. Let's say you're hit by an employee of the state in a car, and he's on the job. You would normally have a case against the person who's driving that car.
Right.
You don't in a state case. You have to sue the state of Georgia or the agency for which that employee is working.
What would another situation be where I would have to sue the state?
For example, I have many, many cases against the Department of Transportation. I sue the DOT quite a bit for negligent design of a road, negligent maintenance. They have an absolute duty to maintain state-owned right-of-ways. So I have that sort of situation quite a bit where a person's been involved in an accident. We investigate it and realize it's because of the defective design or defective warnings, defective signs, defective roadway, negligent maintenance, you know, where there's a drop-off. There's a certain standard they have to follow for a certain amount of drop-off, and maybe they've allowed it to get too deep. Mm. I represent people on those kind of cases quite frequently.
Wow, that is so interesting, and I love your passion. You definitely love what you do.
Thank you. I do. I love it.
So, where are you located?
I'm in Midtown, 1230 Peachtree Street in the Promenade Building. It's a Peachtree Street address, but it's really at 15th and Peachtree, across from Woodruff Arts Center. You can also contact me by email, Robin R-O-B-I-N Clark C-L-A-R-K at GATrialLawyers.net. And that's my website, too, GATrialLawyers.net. You can go there, find out more about me, and my blog is on there as well.
And you're all over social media, too.
I do quite a bit. Yeah, I enjoy it.
And congratulations on the top 50 women.
Thank you.
In the state of Georgia. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Sure. I'm proud of that, too.
Okay. This is a great show, don't you think?
Absolutely.
All right, Ryan, who's next?
All right, thank you, Emily. I'd like to welcome Mr. J.P. Gingras. He is the owner and president of Gingras Law Firm, LLC, an award-winning full-service forensic accounting firm specializing in economic damages, complex business litigation, securities litigation, personal injury, accounting, and medical malpractice and related expert testimony. J.P. is a certified public accountant, certified fraud examiner, certified financial crime specialist, certified in financial forensics, certified global management accountant, as well as a forensic certified public accountant. The Gingras firm was founded and named 2015 Financial Forensic Accounting Firm of the Year in the United States by Corporate LiveWire. And JP was voted the 2014 Personal Injury Economic Damage Assessment Testifying Expert of the Year in the United States by Acquisition International. Prior to being a sole proprietor, JP worked in Atlanta office of Alston & Byrd for almost 4 years as the in-house accounting expert. Welcome, Mr. JP Gingras.
Are you certified in something?
I am certified.
Do you have all those on your wall?
I do, actually. And my wife looks at them and says, that's inappropriate.
Well, if you have any extras, I'll put someone on my wall for me. Just, yeah, change the name.
Thank you so much for being here. That's wonderful.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And tell me a little bit more about exactly what the Gingras firm has to offer.
Right. So I describe my firm, the Gingras firm, as a boutique full service forensic accounting firm. So what does that mean? Boutique is code word for small. Mm-hmm. In my world, very small, meaning a team of one. Forensic accounting is really the area, the specialty area of accounting that deals with actual or anticipated litigation. And forensic simply means suitable for a court of law. So forensic accounting deals with assessing the economic transactions or allegations that, for example, an employee has embezzled some money in a company that would be presented in a court of law.
Thank you. I like that.
Good.
you passed that question on the certification exam.
That's right.
So tell me, what makes you different than other forensic accounting firms?
Right. So the Gingras firm is the alternative choice to big forensic accounting firm. For example, if you call my firm's number, you actually get me because it is my cell phone number. So it's personal service, mm-hmm. Personal attention. Obviously, I can leverage a case with other individuals, but most of the time I am the only one on the case. Also, as described in my introduction, I was part of my experience was in a house at Alston & Byrd. I was actually there a little bit over 4 years, and I actually did motion practice there. So I'm very different than other forensic accountants that were auditors yesterday and thought, well, forensic accounting sounds cool, and let's try to do something in that space. And I was able to learn the in and outs of legal strategies, for example, from attorneys.
That would definitely be the place to learn that.
That's right, which is very different than most forensic accountants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was at Alston & Byrd, we hired a lot of accounting experts from the Big Four, mm-hmm. which they're great firms. They do great work. The issue is availability. Sometimes when you have to talk to your expert mm-hmm. on a deadline, these firms have a lot more services than just forensic accounting.
Sure.
For example, they do audit of the financial statements, tax preparation. My firm focuses solely on forensic accounting. So that's why I'm very different than big firms.
So if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get.
That's right. And again, don't be fooled by the size of my firm. In the last 5 years, I started my business in 2010. I participated. I was involved in more than five securities class actions that have more than its millions of pages in production. And we attained great results. So the size of the firm is not necessarily indicative of what the level of services that I can perform.
Sure, sure. And you've worked with Robin on some cases?
I have. I'm not sure how many, but at least one, for sure.
And what are the types of economic damages suffered by an injured party in a typical personal injury matter?
Yeah, so I'll invite Robin to jump in if you want to.
Well, but JP testified for me in a medical malpractice case on my client's lost wages, did a wonderful job.
That's right. So under Georgia law, you have general damages and special damages. And the difference is that general damages don't have to be established or proven in a court of law. So somebody with my skill set would not be helpful in those types of damages. The other type of damages, economic damages, are special damages. And in personal injury matters, those are normally past and future lost wages, medical costs, which normally is referred to as life care plans, and lost household production. And that is a piece of economic damages that sometimes is forgotten, meaning that if you have someone working at home, those services can be lost and can be valued. And that's an important portion of economic damages.
Absolutely. So other than attorneys, are there other companies that you work with? What types of companies?
Sure. So of course, my caseload ranges from fraud investigations to personal injury matters to securities class action, which in those cases, I write complaints, write Daubert motions, or write motion to dismiss, for example. However, another piece of my business is due diligence. For example, an individual wants to acquire a business, does not want to pay the high fees of a large firm, and therefore hires me to value a business or at least navigate the transaction process.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Right. So if you think about anything that's related to accounting other than tax preparation and audits, my firm can provide those services.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So what should an attorney or injured party look for in their economic damages expert?
Right. So maybe Robin can help me with that. But I think the most important attribute to an expert is to connect with the jury. I think if the expert in any case, economic damages or not, can connect with the jury and explain in easy terms to understand what the level of damages are, then the expert has done his job. What do you think, Robin?
I agree with that. And let me say, as far as an economist, in a trial, I have a lot going on. I have a lot to worry about, like even making sure witnesses get to the courthouse. So I love it when I have someone like JP as an economist testifying. I don't have to worry about that. He's going to be there. He's going to testify. And I don't have to worry. That's off my worry list. So I love that.
That's important. So tell me, what does your firm perform services for both the defense and plaintiff side?
Yeah. So, of course, at Alston & Byrd, I was on the defense side. Mm-hmm. And then I was a partner for about a year in a firm that was mainly plaintiff side. So I have experience on both the defense and plaintiff side. And I also do criminal investigations on a ad hoc basis.
Oh, okay. So if you're on one side versus the other, what's your role?
Right. So my role is a little bit different. On the plaintiff side, you have to prove damages. So I would perform the actual, and I'm specifically referencing personal injury, I would actually perform the calculation of what the estimated damages are. Mm-hmm. On the defense side, then I would review somebody else's calculation and critique or pinpoint inaccuracies. What's important to understand is that as a forensic accountant, whether you're on the defense or the plaintiff, your opinion should be the same. Your role is to establish economic damages on a reasonable basis or economic probability basis. And therefore, one side of the other paying your fees should not be a determining factor on what the level of economic damages are determined to be.
You're just stating facts.
That's
you
correct.
Don't have any biases.
That is correct. So as a forensic accountant, you are an advocate for your opinion, not the plaintiff or not the insurance company, for example. Your opinion matters, and that's where you are an advocate, which is very different than what Robin would do.
Right.
She's an advocate for the plaintiff. I see myself, and you should consider yourself, as an independent testifying expert.
Gotcha. Have you ever got referrals from other attorneys?
Right. So most of my business, I would say 99.9% of my business is referral. I can tell you that my repeated rate, which means if an attorney hires me once, I'm at 100% recurrence.
Sure.
Recurrence. So if you hired me once, you're going to hire me again because
I am
so different than other firms.
Right.
I don't have the capacity of the other firms, but that's where I'm very specific on what cases I pick as opposed to others.
Rich Casanova here, quick question for you. What challenges do you have with your business? We were talking actually before the show, where we were grabbing coffee there, about someone I know that hired for their firm someone that had actually done jail time for embezzlement within a company, and now they're working on the other side of the table. So are there do you do any seminars or coaching or consulting, or do you refer someone in terms of, as a, from business radio perspective, for businesses, are there red flags that something is kind of screwy going on within their organization, or?
Right. So I would say follow your gut. As a business owner, if you think something is wrong, it's worth looking into it. I know there are individuals that just contact me for me to look at their books.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to see what the bank statements. Cash is king, follow the money trail, okay, type of the engagement. And I would say most of the time, their intuition is correct.
No particular red flags other than the funds seem to be dwindling, or but a lot of times is it a good, you know, rule of thumb to have you or someone come in, because then it kind of keeps everybody honest with it, right? If people's looking over their shoulders, or, but you probably have to have, if you put too much power in one person's role or title, is that potential danger?
Right. So you're talking about segregation of duty. Yeah. For example, the person that writes the check shouldn't handle the invoices,
okay,
for example. So that,
okay,
they can forge an invoice and then pay that forged invoice to themselves, for example.
Right.
Okay. When you're an SEC company, you have audits, financial, yeah, statements that take care of that. But of course, having somebody like me with my expertise help in curtailing some, okay, of these events. But again, I think that the biggest red flag is an owner believing or having an intuition that something is awry in their statements. The bank accounts don't reconcile.
Yeah.
There's less money that they expected at the end of the month, things of that nature.
I mean, I've seen issues like on the news sometimes where a huge entity, just over time, a lot of their equipment just slowly starts missing, whatever, right? And they go back and backtrack it, and employees have just one by one taken out computers or things, and it's a little harder to monitor some inventory as opposed to the bank statement. But just, I write checks and create invoices. Hypothetically, how would I go about doing that?
Right. I'm not going to give you a blueprint of how to do that.
All right, we'll talk after. Next cup of coffee's on me.
That's right.
Well, I think also, I mean, there's always room for fraud.
Always I've room heard. For fraud. And, you know, what we were just discussing, the taking of inventory in a corporate environment, meaning, mm-hmm, I take a pen home, that is stealing. When it comes to a corporate asset, those pens should be used for corporate businesses,
right?
Corporate events. So, of course, it's too small to prosecute every single one of them, but it morphs into taking a computer home.
Sure. And the little steps.
That's right.
They can add up.
That's
bigger.
Right. Small step towards the, well, I got away with the small steps, or the small stuff, I will get away with the big stuff.
Right. If nobody's looking. Yeah.
That's right.
So having you there, would that help somebody to even if they don't think anything's wrong, just to, like he said, keep people on their toes?
Sure. Having somebody that has my expertise, sure. I don't really provide that type of service.
Okay.
I do litigation. I work with attorneys.
Okay.
My clients are mostly attorneys, just like Robin. But of course, if you are a small business owner, it's always good to have checks and balances and segregation of duty.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
And you're located where?
I'm located wherever my clients are. I'm located at my cell phone number, which is 404-247-5480. And my email address is jpgingras@thegingrisfirm.com.
Thank you so much. And I just want to remind everybody, we are listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, helping lawyers get the word out about their cause. And this show has been brought to you by 3A Law Practice Management, helping lawyers start and build their practice, by Peachtree Offices, helping lawyers establish a footprint in Atlanta, and also by Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School. You can go to AtlantaLegalExpertsRadio.com and see all the links to their websites, and you can also see all the full bios of all of our guests here today. Experts, we have a really good lineup of experts today. Ryan, who's next?
Thank you, Emily. I'd like to welcome Mr. Sandy Wallach. Sandy's a life member of the Georgia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and one of the National Trial Lawyers' Top 100 Trial Lawyers. He is a member of the Animal Law Section of the Georgia Bar and has provided pro bono assistance in the area of animal law since law school. Sandy has been practicing criminal defense throughout Metro Atlanta for over 20 years. He has experience in handling offenses including murder, armed robbery, aggravated assault, white-collar crime, sexual offenses, commercial gambling, drug offenses, and RICO actions. Sandy has experience and handles cases both the trial and appellate level in state and federal court. Sandy has called Atlanta home for over 30 years, having grown up here, and he is married with three kids and two dogs. Welcome, Sandy Wallach.
Hi, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So where did you grow up? I'm curious.
I grew up in Dunwoody. I went to Dunwoody High School.
You did? I went to Milton. That's close by.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why did you become a criminal defense lawyer?
I became a criminal defense lawyer because at some point after wanting to be a superhero and a baseball player, that's just what I wanted to be. And I don't really have a single recollection of why that came. But in doing it, it's really rewarding to me.
I bet.
I enjoy working with a client one-on-one. Stripped down to its core, what criminal defense lawyers do is we help somebody who's in trouble and they just need help. And whether they did something or they did nothing, they're in a position where they need help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you have your own firm?
Yes.
Obviously. What are some advantages and disadvantages of having your own firm?
I started my own firm over 10 years ago, and I enjoy the freedom of it. I enjoy being able to come and go as I please and not having to answer to somebody aside from my clients. And it's nice to be able to go to the school conference when your kids have it, or to go to the play or the choir or the whatever it might be.
Yes.
The flip side is there's a lot of pressure because you don't have anybody to carry you financially. And that's it, having your own business is another child.
Sure.
It's not a 9-to-5. It doesn't go away. And so it's a lot of work. And for me, it's been rewarding and I enjoy it.
So it's odd hours. You work 24/7, but then you still can take those hours, couple hours to go see the play or.
Right.
Which is really important.
Right. You get to call the shots in that sense. But you do put in more hours as a result of it. And it's not unusual for me to return phone calls at night and work weekends regularly.
Good. So tell me, let's get back to the criminal area. What do you recommend for someone who is contacted by a law enforcement agency requesting to speak with her or him?
The important thing to do is to contact a criminal defense lawyer. The decision isn't so much right there as to should I talk to the police officer or not. It's let me talk to a lawyer and let me find out what the ramifications are. What are the pros and cons? What good is going to come out of it versus what bad's going to come out of it? And then a decision's made. And so I don't have a stock answer when folks call me in that situation. What I try to do with them is talk through what the situation appears to be. Often talk with the police officer so I can get an idea of, is this potential client going to get anything out of it, or is this really just they're going to walk in and get arrested no matter what they say?
Right.
And then oftentimes the question is what is your goal? Are you trying to avoid getting arrested, or are you trying to avoid getting convicted? The conservative thing is to not talk to a police officer, but I've been in many instances where the client has elected to do so, and we've walked out of that interview and never looked back, and there's been no arrest, no case that's come from it. So it's really a case-by-case basis. But the important thing that people need to know is that the criminal defense lawyer can guide them through it, mm-hmm. and that even just having somebody with you at the interview is going to change the complexion of the interview, because the police officer is not going to treat you the same with a lawyer there next to you. The lawyer's going to be able to protect you if things do start to get ugly or take a turn that you weren't prepared for or expect. And the lawyers, you may be intimidated and not feel like you can walk out of there or not answer a question, whereas the lawyer's going to say, my role in there is to say, you know what, Mr. Officer, I don't like the question. I don't like how you're talking to my client. I don't like the direction this has gone. We're done. And we're walking out of here.
Yeah, because even if you're innocent, I know that they can ask questions that can trick you into saying things that don't even matter that they can use later.
Well, and it can be done by trick, or it can be done innocently, just in an answer that you don't realize, and the officer interprets it one way and you meant it a different way.
Sure.
But people in all different fields and professions, it's intimidating when you're one-on-one with an officer.
Right.
And so you want to have somebody there to help guide you and protect you in that. It's like having insurance. You don't want to have to use it, but you want to have it there just in case. And so you want to have a criminal defense lawyer with you just in case.
I like that. So when somebody says, you know, I want to speak to my lawyer, does that immediately make them think that they're guilty?
Well, unfortunately, that is the perception.
Yeah.
And I've had police officers, despite the fact that their role is to protect our rights, which include our constitutional rights, I've had police officers say to me or to a client, well, you know, if you didn't do anything, why do you need a lawyer?
Yeah.
And the reason that you need a lawyer is that so that you have somebody to protect you. It doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. It's just somebody there whose job, whose role, and whose mm-hmm. training is to help protect you through the process.
Because you don't do that all the time.
Right. Because others don't. But that's what I do.
Right. Exactly. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the Atlanta Public School trial. I actually watched the video of your client, Dessa Kerb, and you. I think it was ABC News. When she was actually proven not guilty. But let's go back. What is your opinion, and was it necessary to pursue criminal charges against the educators that were alleged to have cheated in the APS case?
The APS trial was a prime example of over-criminalization. There just was no need for the amount of resources that the state put in, then Fulton County put into that case could have been utilized in so much better ways. To help Atlanta Public Schools and to help the students that they claimed that this was all about. The Professional Standards Commission, the PSC, which governs teachers, had already begun taking action to discipline teachers who were alleged to have violated their ethical oath by cheating or by any other actions, mm-hmm. Either suspending or revoking their teaching certificate. And that was already in place prior to Fulton County District Attorney's Office indicting the case or bringing any charges. Teachers losing their job was more than enough to take care of the situation.
Absolutely.
Without having to bring it to criminal charges and put everybody through the 8 months of trial and what it meant.
Wow. So in your opinion, it was just absolutely unnecessary.
Yes.
What are some of the I'm sorry, wrong line. Can we start over? No, I'm just kidding. How were you able to get an acquittal for your client, Dessa Kerb, in that trial?
It was tireless preparation, it was unwavering commitment, and it was relentless advocacy. She said that she didn't do it. She never wavered, and it was my job to show that to the jury. And it was a tireless role day in and day out of reminding the jury that they needed to look only at Dessa Kerb and not lose her in the other 11 defendants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big concern. Because of the nature of the case and how the judge insisted that it be tried with everybody together. I was able to show the jury, using the state's own evidence, that she was innocent and that really she never should have been there. She never should have been charged to begin with.
She was so excited. She was elated. And she knew she wasn't guilty. And to see her face on the video was just amazing.
Well, and I give her immense credit as a person, because when the verdicts were announced, she was more upset for everybody else mm-hmm. than she was elated for herself.
Right.
And if you watch the video of the when the verdicts are announced and you turn the volume down, you would never know by her face that she was found not guilty.
She was concerned for everybody.
And we were the sixth defendant listed on the indictment, and that's the order the verdicts were announced. And so, you know, by the time it got to us, there were several guilty verdicts announced, not every count, but many of the counts. And so she was so disappointed for everybody else that it took her several minutes to compose herself before she could realize the joy and the fact that while she always believed that she was innocent, she now had been announced innocent and can go on with her life.
And she probably thought that they were going to say the same for her too, watching the line go down.
I was concerned about that, certainly. I don't know that she was. I think that she had unwavering belief in herself. And I think that
she absolutely did.
She's a religious person and just knew that it was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fortunately for her, the jury system worked.
Yeah. Yeah. So the sentences that were meted out, were they, for the other defendants, were they unjust or were they just?
Very, very unjust and disproportionate. If you take these kinds of people and this kind of case in any other environment, these are probation cases. There's no incarceration in these circumstances under these facts, where you have folks who are mostly in their middle-aged, who have no criminal record. who committed nonviolent offenses. These are not people who we put in jail on a regular basis. And the only reason to do it here was political reasons.
Right.
And Judge Baxter's anger at them for going to trial. And you shouldn't be punished for exercising your constitutional rights.
Wow. It's disturbing, actually. So what is it like being on trial for so long? 8 months, you said?
It's undescribable. You know, Robin knows we you know, trial lawyers, we go to trial, and you're used to being on trial for a few days or a few weeks. But there's not you can't imagine what it's like to be on trial day in and day out for that long. I was doing a training for law students recently, and one of the students asked me about that, and she was that fun? And I was like, no. I said it would be like if you were taking exams, and instead of it being an exam week, it'd be 8 months of exams.
It's
just that nonstop pressure and you know the unrelenting hours, because when trial's done during the day, you don't go home and put your feet up. You start preparing. You go right to the office and start preparing for the next day. And then you're up early and preparing that morning before court starts. And it just continues on and on like that.
I had a client that called me, and she's starting to establish her business for a second time, an attorney, because she had been in trial. It was actually 8 months. And because she had just literally disappeared from the world for 8 months and has to reestablish her entire business. So I can't imagine.
Well, and that's the process that I'm in now is really reacclimating myself to what it feels like to not be in the courtroom every day and rebuilding my practice.
But it was so rewarding for you and your client.
Fortunately for us, it came out well.
Yes. Yes. Awesome. Is there any other questions you had?
What do you attribute that, Sandy, to the length of that? I mean, that was historic, wasn't it, for that type of judgment or case?
It was, and the length of it was a combination of a few things. One, it was the judge's insistence that all the defendants be tried together, and we over and over again tried to get him to understand that we could break it up into groups, and it would mean multiple trials, but collectively, those would still be shorter than what it was going to be, that it would be more fair for the defendants if it was that way. And then the other aspect that came in is the judge gave the state pretty much unfettered leeway to introduce evidence. And so there were weeks and weeks of evidence regarding educators who admittedly cheated, and schools where cheating took place that weren't charged in the indictment. And so for the state, it was, you know, just putting up and building up their case in the big picture of there was cheating all across Atlanta public schools. But it wasn't related to any of the defendants who were on trial. And in other instances and trials that I've been involved with, the judge would have said that that's not relevant. We don't need to hear about it, and we don't need to extend this trial for months for that to happen. But you know, Judge Baxter allowed it to happen, and that's what caused it to be 8 months. We told the jurors when we were starting to pick a jury in August that we expected the trial to be done somewhere by Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas at the latest.
Right.
And then there we were talking about spring break and beyond.
Wow. So did it feel a little like Groundhog Day, like every day was just, here we go again?
Absolutely. And even Judge Baxter, in one of his recent interviews, I saw referenced feeling a little bit of PTSD, right, post-traumatic stress disorder. I look back at it now, and it was only weeks ago, I don't know how we all did it.
Right. So prior to that, what was your longest case prior to that?
I'd been on trial for a month in a federal RICO
gang case. So that gives you perspective, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so were you able to handle other cases, other clients at that time, or?
Very little, very little. You keep the ship afloat somewhat. I wasn't able to take on much new business, not able to go to any other court appearances. And for the most part, I have to ask other judges and prosecutors and my clients to just be really patient.
So it's just basically a standstill on your part. I know we're almost out of time, and you kind of touched on it earlier, but is there an instance, to go back to, if you're brought into the, as a suspect, is there a case where you're okay to kind of have a conversation without bringing in an attorney?
You might be.
I mean, you're a little bit biased, but yeah.
You might be, but it's taking an awful big risk. And so my suggestion is there's no reason to take that risk.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
And you just don't know what's going to happen. And so you want to take the safe approach, and the safe approach is to have somebody with you to help you and guide you. Just like, as I said, you want to have, insurance,
right?
Health insurance, life insurance, car insurance.
I mean, I don't know if it just happens in the movie or the TV shows or if it's in real life, but you do see these, and it's kind of written that way, but you'll see a suspect being interrogated for 5, 6, 10, 12 hours. And eventually they're kind of just get worn down. They're going to kind of crack or say something. And all they probably need is a few sound bites from that interview and to build a case. Yes or yes?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And listen, law enforcement officers, they're trained to do that. That's right. What their job is.
And if they have a criminal and they've committed a crime, that's their job to get that out of them, right?
But, well, and unfortunately, what human nature is not, you know, they don't know if they have a criminal, but it's their perception. And what happens with human nature is you make up your mind and then you stop looking objectively and it's subjectively. And so if the officer decides that you did it, it doesn't really matter what you say. It's all going to be building the case against you.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I conclude my cross
here.
Examination. I'm done. Yeah. Always wanted to say that. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here today. And if you'll tell our listeners how they can reach you.
You can reach me at walacklaw.com, WALLACKLAW.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, everybody. We've got some really top trial lawyers and top attorneys here and top forensic accountants here. We got definitely experts in the room. It was another great show, and I look forward to next week. This is Emily Rowell with Atlanta Legal Experts and Peachtree Offices signing out.